Hello and welcome to Better Construction with Sean McStay, the podcast where we discuss design and construction techniques, products, and details that lead to a better built environment.
All right, and welcome to this week's episode of Better Construction. This week, I'm super excited to have Mike Cairns with me. Mike is the architectural product representative at Intertech Windows and Doors. So, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm really excited to be on here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you taking time to chat with me. I know it's pretty busy right now. I'm excited to learn a little bit more about Intertech, certainly. Talk about Windows and Doors, because a lot of the people listening are going to be really curious about, you know, what should they be looking for when they're selecting those. Before I jump into that, though, I know you've been in the industry for over 20 years now. How did you get started in kind of the construction and products industry?
It's a good question. I did actually kind of fall into it. My dad has been in the construction industry basically forever. And I went to BCIT for design. And after that, it was actually not that easy to find work. And I wanted to get something. So my dad just sort of lined me up with some summer work initially and carried on through. I ended up being involved in the leaky condo crisis, and everything just sort of fit really well. It piqued a lot of my interests and some of my natural abilities.
Okay, and so right now, obviously, you're on the technical side and the sales side of the business. When you started, were you doing hands-on work? Where have you always kind of been in the consulting side?
Very, very hands-on. I was a laborer on commercial sites for a couple of big developers. I was doing steel framing and fiberglassing and lots of swinging hammers.
Interesting. So then the question I always ask, because obviously I've been in sales for quite some time, is why the move into the sales side of things?
It's actually kind of a natural development, depending on which side of the business you're in. My focus was more on the renovation end of things, doing millwork, working on high-end window and door replacements in homes that required restoration, as well as the condo restoration. And there's a necessary interaction with the clients that really it does put you in a sales role on a regular basis. You have to essentially sell yourself, your customer, the services that you provide to the clients. Sometimes after the fact, just to make sure that they're on board with what's going on and what's happening and to keep them happy. It was a particularly effective skill in the condo restoration because nobody's really happy to have you there. You're there because it's a necessity and they're spending lots of money. And, it's oftentimes these people were in a really tight spot. So it meant that we had to be that much better at customer relations just to do our job in the first place and to try and make this as positive of an experience as possible for the people who are going through it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, for any listeners that are maybe from south of the border and they're not sure what we're talking about with the condos is, in BC, we had a leaky condo crisis caused by some combination of material science, not quite working the way people expected it to, and some construction issues. But there were a lot of people that were affected by it, and whole buildings had to have facade work done and all that type of stuff. So I can imagine that, yeah, not only are you a salesperson, which people naturally are a little bit hesitant to engage with to start with, but now you're a salesperson selling them something that they really wish they didn't need.
Yeah, that's about as tough a sell as you can possibly get.
Yeah, I would imagine so, for sure. All right, so nowadays you work for Intertech Windows and Doors. Tell us a little bit, kind of in a nutshell, what is Intertech Windows and Doors?
Intertech is a local, high-quality manufacturer of European engineered or an original German-designed product. So we source products from a number of different places around the world, bring them together, and we've put together what we feel is the best possible system for windows and doors to meet really high performance levels in every metric. So that's high air tightness, high water tightness, high thermal resistance.
Okay. And so, I mean, I sold windows and doors for a lot of years, and I know that there are tons of different varieties of materials used to make windows and doors. There's metal, there's, you know, different types of metal, aluminum, there's wood, there's PVC, there's fiberglass. What particular materials does Innotek use for their windows?
Our windows are a German-manufactured, unplasticized PVC. Depending on which product line it is, it's either steel-reinforced or it's an insulated frame for passive house application, for example.
Okay. And so what's the difference then for people who aren't sure between unplasticized and maybe regular PVC that we're used to seeing?
Yeah, the unplasticized PVC doesn't have a number of the chemicals that are really the bad things that you think about with plastic, things like phthalates, plasticizers, some of these additives that used to make it really easy and really cheap to make PVC, but they were not very good for your health. So we figured out much better ways to build the PVC, better ways to build up the structure, make it more durable, and get something that's an environmentally friendly manufacturing process, as well as being consumer friendly, of course.
Okay. So definitely some environmental improvements there, which is obviously important. I have heard in the past, you know, one of the big complaints about PVC windows being that they don't necessarily always hold their color well, or they can sometimes get brittle over time. Does this different chemical process kind of impact that as well?
Absolutely. The less expensive methods of manufacturing PVC can certainly have a huge impact on the longevity. But when you build the product the right way and you have the correct process, you certainly get multiple decades of use out of it. Product in use from our profile manufacturer in just under 60 years functional use. And our product, we know for sure, has been in use for more than 20 years. And it is recyclable at the end of life that we know of at least 8 times. And every time it actually does improve in structure. So it's definitely a product with a very extended lifespan.
Interesting. Okay. So it can not only be recycled at end of life, but obviously when during the manufacturing process, like offcuts, things like that, I'd imagine those are all recycled as well.
Absolutely. It's actually an in-demand resource because it does improve every time you cycle it. You heat it up, you re-extrude it, it gets a little bit stronger. So those offcuts, that material that contains recycled content, is actually really tough to get a hold of.
Okay. And so tell us a little bit about the manufacturing process with Innotek Windows. You know, you said that it's a European profile, a German profile of product, but it's made here in Canada. What's maybe some differences in how you guys make and test your products?
We have an extremely high-tech manufacturing process, so the level of perfection is dialed in quite a bit. We're talking thousands of an inch of tolerance, and we've been doing it for a very long time. We specialize in the tilt-turn function, so instead of trying to build every type of window that there is, we build one type of window, and we build it as well as we possibly can. So we use a very good hardware and that wealth of experience that we have building with that hardware, using high quality components, end up with a product that does test out and is provably best performing windows that you can find.
Okay. And so tilt and turn is kind of like you can both bring it in kind of like a hopper window, but also like an in-swing casement. Is that right?
Yeah, the dual action is pretty cool. Being able to tilt it for ventilation means that it's nice and secure. You can leave it tilted for that ventilation in the hopper function, and just leave it like that. You don't have to worry about somebody, you know, climbing in through your window, like the rash of burglaries we always get every spring. As soon as it gets warm, everybody forgets.
Yeah, that is very true.
It's a long winter. So people forget about that security, but you don't have to worry about it with the tilt function. And the turn function, of course, you can, that's for egress, in case of, you know, fire or, you know, even just maintenance, you can wash the window from the inside.
Yeah, definitely helpful. And then what about the locking mechanism? You know, I've heard, you know, single point, multi-point locking. What type of locking mechanism do you guys use?
We use a multi-point, but the terminology is sometimes complicated because multi-point means more than one locking point. Sure. Oftentimes in maybe a North American style window, multi-point might just be two locking points, one third of the way up the window, another one two-thirds of the way up the window. But a European multi-point actually means all the way around the window. So you get, depending on the size of the window, anywhere from six to a dozen locking points. And every single component of the window is held tight against those seals all the way around so that you maintain that air and water tightness.
And that's all activated off of a single lever, though, still.
Exactly. It's just one single lever. The hardware we use is actually slightly self-adjusting. So even if there's some minor inconsistencies, if your house is settling, if there happens to be some sort of wind pressure or something like that, in effect, as you're closing, instead of having high friction, it's actually those little hardware locking points are going to move to adjust and go in as smoothly as they possibly can.
In your role, you're advising people on which types of windows to use, what level of performance they need. Speaking kind of in more general terms, if you're a builder, because a lot of my listeners are in the community, they're builders or they're designers, and they're at a starting point for a project. How do you even begin to start to pick from all the different types of windows and doors that are out there?
Well, the easy answer is talk to us. The real answer, of course, is that every project is unique and every product has its pros and cons. Different materials will act differently in different situations, and different hardware functions will give you different capabilities. So if you're looking at a project, I always think that the first point to start at is the performance level. What is it that you require to make the building work the way that it needs to work? And then from there, you have to go to the comfort. You have to say, okay, how can we actually make this home better for the occupants? The person who's buying the house is the person that is the customer. And they need to be factored in all the way through. So what is going to be the best thing for them? And sometimes that will actually inform things like the design decisions. Should the windows be larger or smaller? Should it be configured differently? These are all questions that should always be answered from the perspective of the customer, the end user, the person that actually has to live in the home. It's not so much about, you know, just trying to hit these particular numbers.
And so for you, I mean, I know with what I do with Sega, if someone asks me who my customer is, I say everyone. But then if they ask, you know, who should be using these products, I have an answer for that. I guess I would ask you kind of the same question. Other than, of course, everybody should be using Innotek Windows, who's kind of the ideal customer, is the best fit?
The best fit customer is somebody that actually cares about their home and the level of comfort inside the home. Somebody that cares about how much heat is lost, somebody who cares about how much heat is retained by the air tightness, you know, somebody that's concerned about the long-term structural longevity of their building, somebody who wants larger spans of glass to let in more light and have a better view, somebody who wants hardware that's easy to use, somebody who wants a window that's actually going to last for the long term. If you want to break it down into fairly simple terms, somebody that's going to be maybe a long-term owner or a long-term tenant of a building is going to be interested in our windows. If you're just looking at flipping something and building something for a very short period of time, then highest quality, most durable product probably isn't going to be the right fit for you.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So definitely people, you know, listening who are building higher end places and high performance places. So I know you guys make a variety of different performance levels. tell me a little bit more about your Passive House certified windows. You know, what makes them different from maybe a traditional window that people are used to seeing?
Passive House is a really interesting standard to work with because it actually does focus on performance in a very specific way. Like it actually looks at the individual performance of different components in different ways. So it will look at the air tightness of your product. It will look at the durability of the product. It will look at the environmental footprint. It will look at the how well it performs thermally in terms of occupant comfort and also in terms of absolute performance. So how well does it keep energy in the home? And is it going to be safe for the occupants, for the building, that sort of thing? So it's this very diverse and very specific metric to work to. And it definitely stretches the manufacturers. You have to build a better product to meet that standard for sure. You can't just rely on, in the specific example of a window, you can't just put in really, really good glass to make up for a very bad frame. You have to have a well-performing window in all aspects. The hardware has to work properly. The seals have to work properly. The frame has to have the high level of thermal performance that's required to prevent any interior condensation, to prevent any sensation of cold from the occupants. You have to have very good performing glass to be able to overcome the amount of heat that's lost by them. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, and it's a balancing act too with Passive House, I know, especially when it comes to your windows, because in a Passive House, you're losing very small amounts of energy through your walls or windows. But also depending on the time of the year, you're planning on gaining some energy through your walls and windows. And quite often people are kind of curious, like, how does that work? So when it comes to gaining heat energy through windows, but only sometimes, maybe talk a little bit about that.
That's one of the parts of it that I might have a difference of opinion from a lot of people that are out there. Oftentimes the heat gain through windows is considered from this absolute sense. You say, okay, well, over the course of the year, we're going to gain X amount of energy for heating, and we balance that against the cost of heating, and therefore you end up reducing your environmental footprint or your energy consumption. However, the specific amount of heat that comes through the window is going to have an immediate effect on comfort of the people inside that space. And so it is possible to negatively affect the interior occupant's comfort very, very quickly by having glass with too much solar heat gain. It looks good on paper. It takes your numbers down, but it's not the right way to go. And sometimes trying to dial things in too specifically, trying to follow those numbers, it has caused problems for projects. And it's something that for guys who've been maybe supplying windows and using high performance glass for a number of years, it's much more recognizable because it's been popping up for a very long time. But for people that are kind of new to very high performing products, it's kind of a new problem because it's not something that they came across. And I don't think it's something that comes up as much in Europe because we have a higher UV index ratings in North America. We get much broader swings of temperature. It's not just like kind of 7 to 15 all year. It's minus 30, it's minus 40, it's plus 30. It's just the temperature's all over the place. So those crazy swings of temperature make it much more difficult to kind of maintain a nice even baseline than if it's just colder for a while and warmer for a while.
I mean, I think another big thing that affects that and a difference between Europe and here necessarily is in Europe, shading is a very common thing, whether that be external shades, internal shades, you know, they're used to that versus here shading is kind of not something that people are thinking of number one when they're designing a building. How does shading impact your guys' windows? And do you have any kind of technologies that allow shading to be done without kind of impacting the footprint of your product?
Yeah, the shading is actually a really great thing to bring up because, yeah, obviously in Europe, they've got so many shading products and they're so common and even combinations of exterior and interior shading that go together. And you've got interior shades that are R1 or R2 and they're heat reflective and then the exterior shades for the really high sun areas. And that's really cool. And in North America, there's a couple of companies that do a really good job and we don't have that wealth of diverse products, particularly inexpensive products that can sometimes be needed to sort of balance the industry out a little bit. So we actually have not Inatech ourselves, but another company that we deal with quite a bit. They have an exterior shading product that mounts to the window itself. If it's an operable window, it actually goes in place of a bug screen and it's solar powered. So you can actually get the shading that's required. You can dial it up all the way to, I think, 85% solar heat rejection. And so you get your bug screen, you get your solar shading without having to go through the envelope in some way. You don't have to wire through the window. You don't have to put a hole in the wall. You don't have to design your envelope around a shading system, which I'm sure there are some fantastic solutions out there, but I just know that something that means you don't even have to put a screw or a hole into any product on the envelope of your building is definitely a very simple solution that I even used in my own home.
Yeah, no, and that's where I saw them to begin with, for sure. One thing that I thought was interesting about them is like you said, there's no holes through your envelope, so that's great from an airtightness and thermal bridging standpoint. But they're still, if I remember correctly, they're still can be connected to a control system.
Yeah, they're wireless. So they've got a little solar panel on the exterior that obviously powers it. And the remote for it is wireless. So it can also be keyed into controls from whether it's a control system, thermostat, your smartphone. There's a bunch of different things. You know, it's not free, but it's I'm pretty sure that it would be particularly for a project that's already built. If you're finding maybe a couple months of the year, it's getting a little on the warm side from that nice high solar heat gain glass. This would probably be the way to help you make some really easy control of that temperature.
Well, that sounds like a really interesting technology for sure. Two questions that I normally ask towards the end of the podcast. And the first one I'm going to change a little bit because I'm curious what your take is on it. I'm curious, where do you think windows and doors are going? Because I hear people kind of jokingly say, well, you know, we had single pane, now and then double pane, now there's triple pane. And I have actually seen quad pane windows as well, typically for like the Arctic. But are we just going to keep adding more glass or how do you think that's going to progress over the next 10 years?
As somebody that used to install a lot of windows, I would say adding more glass is not the way to go. That's pretty unpleasant to pick up a quad glazed window. It's already triple glazed windows are pretty hefty to begin with. There are some other interesting developments. We've used vacuum insulated glazing, for example. Basically, you're just evacuating all of the air between two panes of glass, much like your thermos mug for coffee. It's an old technology, actually. Old vacuum tubes for your guitar amp or old radios and televisions. So it's nothing that's too new. It's just being able to apply it in clear glass for a window. That's a new application of the technology. And personally, I'm in favor of concepts like that, where you take something that's a tried, tested, and true concept. You're just maybe coming up with a better way to build it or a new application for it. But, you get some pretty stunning results, stuff that's like a 0.3 U value. So that's, more than double the thermal resistance of a high quality triple glazed unit. So that's super impressive. That definitely takes us to the next step. And, with a lot of really high performing products, ordinarily you're talking about these incremental advances. You say, oh, the, you know, we got our window to be 5% better than the previous one. And it usually costs a lot more than 5%. Then, so you start to get diminishing returns. So the vacuum insulated glazing is actually such a radically different technology that you're not beset by the same diminishing returns. You can actually, for the same cost jump as going from double to triple, you can get a better result than going from double to triple. So that's kind of an interesting effect to be able to see. So I think there's definitely something in that technology. The quad glazing, I personally, I'm not 100% sold on it yet, just because I haven't seen any really stellar warranties that are coming out to go with the quad glazing. Most of them also have very, very high solar heat gain in order to eliminate the potential for heat buildup between all of those multiple layers of glass. You want the heat energy to pass through to the inside, which is great for trapping heat in the winter, but it'll also do the same in the summer. I think that would be a better application in Europe again than it would in North America, because of the differences in the markets. Is there going to be something else that's super cool? Maybe some nanotechnology that comes out, like, you know, some of those nano films that are solar panels, that's necessarily going to collect a fair bit of the energy that's coming through the glass.
That definitely is interesting. I know we have on our new factory, or the addition to our factory that we just built over in Switzerland, they've got some of those PV units, basically, mm-hmm. They're built into the glass. So I think that's certainly an interesting technology as well. So the last question that I always ask is just a personal interest question for me, because I love books and I collect books. So the question is, if you could recommend a book to anyone, personal or professional, what would be your go-to?
You mean other than the Lord of the Rings?
For the podcast listeners, there's a Lord of the Rings poster on Mike's wall. Check us out on YouTube. You'll be able to see it in person, but yeah.
That's a good question. Most of what I've been reading lately is mostly digital-based when it comes to, you know, construction and information and that sort of thing. But the Pacifist Canada textbook definitely has a lot of information in there. I'd say that's a good place to start if you're not already there on Passive House and you want to learn basics and get those fundamentals in. You can read that for a very long period of time and still learn new things.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. And PassiveHouse has a wide variety of resources available. So that's a good recommendation for sure. That and Lord of the Rings, of course. Perfect. Well, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show. For everyone who's listening, I'm going to go ahead and put links to Innotech and to some of the other companies that we've talked about down below. If you do have any questions for Mike, you feel free to reach out there. And in the meantime, Mike, have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thanks for having me.